Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And thanks to everyone who came out to the Jericho Chronicles shows in the UK. Great night in Glasgow on Monday. Sold that place out. Another last night in Belfast. Great time with the Jericho at WrestleMania topic. But tonight, it's the last show in London. The biggest show of the tour at the Grand. We're talking about my greatest matches, plus your questions, and I'll give you some answers. There are some tickets left. Check out itrtix.com. There's some VIP packages available as well. Do not miss these spoken word storytelling shows. I really enjoy them. Should I do more? And if so, where should I go? And also, if you live in the States, tune in to True TV tomorrow night, Thursday, July 7th, and see me having some fun with the Impractical Jokers. I'm joining Sal Volcano, Brian Quinn, Q, and James Murray is a special guest. And actually, that's who I got coming up on today's show. Sal and Q return to Talk is Jericho to discuss my special guest appearance on Impractical Jokers, what it's been like doing the show without their longtime friend and partner, Joe Gatto, who left the series earlier this year. Joe did a lot more for the show than just comedy, skits, and pranks. Sal and Q also talk about some of the most embarrassing moments, and there's plenty of them. Crazier pranks as well, like when Sal and Joe had to open for Imagine Dragons and got booed off the stage intentionally, or when Sal had to get not one but two tattoos of Jaden Smith, and that time that Q had to continually stop the tram tour at Universal Studios. They talk about filming during COVID, how they're able to get away with some of the pranks and bits now that people know who they are. 10 years into Impractical Jokers, they are played at 51% of the time on True TV. We're talking about our episode and how Q almost had hypothermia from sitting in a bathtub full of ice. You have to watch the episode to see. But hear all about it. Sal and Q from the Impractical Jokers are coming up now. But before we get going, Fozzie heading out again this fall. Save the World Tour continues September 8th in Columbus, Ohio. We are crisscrossing the States doing shows in Canada. FozzieRock.com has all the dates and ticket information along with details on our legendary VIP meet and greets. Then we're heading down under in November and December, New Zealand and Australia. Fozzie is headed your way, kicking things off November 28th in Auckland, New Zealand, hitting Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide. Come rock with us this fall all around the world. We're also coming back to the UK in November, England, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Scotland, Wales. Go to FozzieRock.com for all information, tickets, VIPs, and everything in between. All right, let's get to Sal and Q from the Impractical Joker Appreciation Society right now, right here on Talk is Jericho. So we are here at the ungodly morning time of 8 a.m. with Q and Sal of the Impractical Jokers. And it seems like this is the only time in our very busy schedules we could do this. Why are we doing this at 8 in the morning again?
Because you asked.
Well, I could have asked to do 2 in the afternoon.
But you asked for 8 in the morning.
Yeah, we didn't understand it either.
You guys' schedule, though, is super packed between all the different things that you're doing. And one of them is still filming. Are we still filming the season, the new season that's about to drop very quickly that I was on?
Well, you were on the end of 9. We're shooting season 10 now.
Already?
We don't get any breaks, man. We got to keep shooting before they realize, like, they can cancel us. You know?
You were on the last 9 episodes of season 9. So we filmed those 9. And now we're off to 10. I had a schedule of when yours airs, and I'm trying to look it up right now.
It's next week.
It airs July 7th, yes.
Well, now, Sal, do you understand why I wanted to do it this week? That's probably why we're here at 8 in the morning, so we could get it done to air it next week to promote the show. See? The synergy is perfect.
Yes. You are a professional.
Yeah. Well, let's just go one other step here. You mentioned that you wanted to do the 10th season before they realize that you're going to get canceled. 10 seasons of this shit? How the hell did you get that thing? How'd you get that past the censors?
We're just starting to look around and realize that we're on season 10. Like, it's been happening lately where we're like, how the hell did we get 10 seasons? Like, it's almost unheard of today. And the crew started to look around, and everybody started to look around about how much grayer everybody is. And like how much, we're all like, are we really 10 years older? And we are. It's crazy. It's nuts.
I think when we signed in the beginning in 2010, I think we signed a 10-season contract. We didn't know what we were doing. So, you know, it's amazing that with season 10, we do have season one rates, but
yeah, right. it was the 10-year tryout contract.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Season 11, you're finally going to get paid.
Yeah. Be great. Yeah.
But it's interesting because for this season, for 9 at least, the whole concept of the show kind of switched. Because before it was kind of sending you guys out into the wild, and maybe there's different episodes, but the one that we did was kind of all in-house in a studio scenario.
Yeah, that was COVID.
We came with the COVID regulations, which was kind of wild. Like, I guess all of season 9, except for maybe like, what, the first two eps, Q?
Yeah, we shut down while we were shooting season 9.
Yeah, we stopped at season, it was episode 2 when we stopped down, and then we did 24 episodes in COVID regulations. So we had to like retool the whole thing. So, you know. But I think we did a good job. It's just we couldn't go up to people. No more in public. No more on the street. No more in, you know, like just a public area or anything like that. So everything had to be rethought out. We didn't want to make it seem like obvious. So we did everything we could to kind of just like make it appear as normal as possible. You know, the regular bits just had to be a lot more scheduled, like, you know, meetings and PowerPoint presentations and focus groups and just weird things. Like we did music studio stuff. So we were behind glass while the other people were doing voiceovers. Anything, we did one where they were, I think, assembling something. The people were in our yard, but we were up on the terrace. I think that was, I don't know. I might be confused, but we did all stuff like that.
Yeah, that was it. We shot that at Snug Harbor Outdoors. That's why we were able to shoot with people.
And then with you, obviously, not to give much away, but yeah, like it's just us. There's no public. It's you, and my mom.
I know. It was basically just you, me, Q, and Murray, and Murr, and that was it.
And, yeah, that's it, and my mom.
Yeah. And your mom. That's right. Yeah, she was amazing. But was it hard to do a change like that, or was it a welcome change to shake it up a bit, or how did you guys deal with that?
The only welcome thing was this. We basically, for the first time ever, because our show is unique in that, like, Monday we're shooting in the basement of a bodega. Tuesday we're shooting in a library. Like, we don't have sets. We don't have – it's right. Every day's in a new location, which is kind of a pain in the ass. But whatever. It's the job. So for the first time with it, we kind of rented out – we had, like, Impractical Joker Studios. Like, we rented out this building in Jersey, made it look different in a lot of different ways. And then, you know, we have our various method for getting the people that we're messing with to come in. But we drove to the same place every day, and it was a half hour from my house, and there was always parking, and it was always air conditioned and heating. It was like having a studio show, and it was like, that part was awesome. But we really felt constrained by, and I think we did a great job. Like, I don't really have any complaints about season 9. It was a lot harder to do. And it's so funny because, like, people will complain about it online, and you're like, you bastards, like, if you knew how hard we worked to get these episodes out the door, and you guys are like, I don't see any parks. I'm like, oh, I'll show you a park, a cemetery, you sons of bitches. Like, yeah. So that was it. But we just shot out in a supermarket for the first time the other day, and in a park for the first time the other day. And it felt like the sun came out. It was beautiful.
World, right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all of us had to recalibrate, you know, during the lockdown. I mean, like you said, we were doing wrestling, you know, Dynamite for 9 months in front of no people. And the first time we had, you know, I think the limited seating of 500 people in the 6,000 capacity Daily's Place, it felt like Madison Square Garden.
Because there's
people, it works again, and they're here.
And Daily's Place had its own personality. Like, it was kind of just shooting there had its own personality with the outdoors and the sales shit.
Yeah.
I don't know. You guys really made it work. Even when it was just the wrestlers around the ring, you guys made it work. And then Daily's Place really worked. I thought you pulled it off great.
We had no choice, much like you guys had no choice. You still got a show to make, so let's switch kind of. Because correct me if I'm wrong, in other seasons, it was more of like ridiculous challenges and embarrassing each other in public and making each other do things that normally you wouldn't do. But yet for our season and our show, I mean, I don't mind saying this because it probably will get people like, you are in this ice cold bath for literally probably about an hour. Yeah, which was insane. 48 minutes.
Yeah.
And this was like freezing. And I remember thinking, I feel so bad for this dude on camera because it was freezing.
Oh, did you feel bad? Because it didn't seem like you felt bad.
I'm a professional. Was that always part of the show as well? Kind of this physical challenge, shall we say?
There were elements of it here and there, but it wasn't the norm. Even for us, it's like, you know, once we're evolving, like once there's so many episodes, we have to really start branching out. We started to do physical stuff too. Right. But it really wasn't the norm as opposed to like what we were doing to you. But I'll tell you this though. I don't know if you saw the aftermath of that. Like Hugh, they had to bring him to the hospital. They couldn't get his body temperature back up. And I have video and pictures.
Yeah, he comes in to check up on me to see how I'm doing. He starts filming me. And I'm like, you don't care about me. Get out of here.
No, it was very serious. Like I went in, it was like two or three EMTs in there, and you were wrapped in, I'm going to say 10 blankets.
It was pretty crazy. They had like one of those Jedi Knight type robes that like went around me, and then they had heaters blowing on me, but I couldn't get my core temperature back up. I was shivering for an hour afterwards.
That's insane. Like that's how you get like hypothermia and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and then my jeans froze to my skin. The seams of my jeans froze to my skin. So when I took them off, they ripped my skin off.
Oh, my gosh.
Dude, and then my thighs got black and blue for 2 weeks afterwards. It was crazy. It was like...
This was all a bonus. We didn't even know this was going to happen.
And Simi, our new showrunner, like... Simi's been with us a long time, but he's show running now. And like... You could tell he was like, holy f-. Like, I just got this job and these guys are already getting their skin ripped off and stuff like that. He felt really bad. Simi was the only one I felt really cared.
Is this what you signed up for when you signed the 10-year deal? Did you know you'd be doing stuff like this?
No, not at 46, man. I didn't think we'd be getting more hardcore as we went. I thought we would start relaxing, but no, that's not been the case.
Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, you guys have done the show many, many years ago, but let's kind of go through how this whole phenomenon started, because the Jokers are a phenomenon. I mean, you guys, we were talking a little bit when you were off the air, Sal, about the shows that you're doing on your own in these giant theaters, which when the Jokers tour, you guys are doing the O2 Arena in frickin' London. I'm going to London tonight to do the Grand Theater for my spoken word show, capacity about 700. You guys are going to the freaking O2 Arena, capacity 20,000. Where's the justice there? What the hell's going on?
Chris, when you've been in an industry as long as we have.
But how did this whole thing start? Were you guys all high school friends? What happened with this?
Yeah, 1990. We're all the same age. We went into high school at the same exact time in 1990. We met that year. And really, we were all friends. We weren't like a four-man clique or anything like that. And, we just, I think, like, after high school, we started doing sketch and improv. And that's when, like, I guess the seed of it all started, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, who knows?
we made a sales tape that was surprisingly very much what the show turned out to be. There were some elements that didn't make it. We had a talking van in the pitch tape.
It voiced by Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, we wanted Patrick Stewart to voice the van, and he was good. And the van hated us.
Six strings.
Yeah. So in the pitch tape, it's the four of us in a van, and the van's we're pretending to talk to a van, and the van's like, go out and do this. And we went out, but once we got out of the van, I think we shot at Victoria's Secrets, right? It was like, wear a bra.
We shot at Victoria's Secrets. We shot at a movie theater in Times Square and a couple of other like stores. The whole idea was the van hated us. And Patrick Stewart was the voice of the van, like kind of like Kit. He was over it and just so dismissive of us the whole time. Like they didn't get that part. Yeah. But we filmed the sizzle reel on our phones like a few days before the meeting. Yeah. It was kind of crazy. And then, you know what's so funny? We pitched MTV first, and they said they wanted to buy it, but they wanted to make it a game show. Mm. They wanted us to host it or not even host.
No, they didn't even want us on it.
They didn't want us in it. They wanted to have different contestants on every game, and then they would have rotating comedians telling the contestants what to do. And we said, well, you know, then True offered us the show with us in it. We said to MTV, well, we think, like, we're comics, and, you know, we think that we want to play ourselves so people, like, will get to know the character and have be invested and all that stuff. So they were like, no, we don't want to do that. So we went with True, and then MTV made the show anyway. They made the
– Oh, really?
They literally made the show that they said they wanted to make with us off of our idea. They 100% just went ahead and made it anyway.
Yeah.
But it was called Money from Strangers, and it was a strip show. It was on every – like, and it was contestants in a van with comedians, and they drove up to places, and then the contestants got out, and the comedians stayed in the van and told them what to do over the mic.
Oh, wow.
They had a lot of good comics on it, but it was like we had gotten on air first. And then by that time, like, I think we were on air for like almost maybe a season or a half season, and people were just like, what is this knockoff? And then it lasted like a couple of seasons or whatever. But it was kind of ballsy of MTV, honestly, to tell you the truth, to go and just take our idea and do it.
Well, especially 10 years ago when True TV was very much a fledgling network. I mean, this is one of the things where you guys have become synonymous. And the face of True TV is the Impractical Jokers. I mean, you go to the TV guide, and I do it all the time, where I'll be looking for something to watch, and you're flipping through, and it's like, you know, 8 o'clock Impractical Jokers, 9 o'clock Impractical Jokers. I think everybody was like, how much Impractical Jokers? You guys, like, you're like TBS with a Christmas story, just playing 24-hour loops.
Well, I think that's actually the answer to your spoken word debacle, my friend, because we...
Debacle! Debacle!
because it's not, you know, they don't have to pay us to air it repeats. So they air it constantly, because it's technically a reality show. So what we lost, you know, unscripted, right. Thank you. What we lost in that, you know, steady paycheck for the rest of our lives, we gained in just exposure. We're always on. We're always on. And, like, so that helped our touring. It was a nonstop commercial for our tour.
It's insane that we are on.
I mean, we're always on.
As much as we're on. We crunched some numbers three seasons ago. In season 7. We were getting ready for renegotiation, and our people crunched the numbers and found out that we aired that year. We aired 51% of the time.
Wow.
Of all total programming that year, 51%.
Yeah.
It might have gone up. I got to be honest. I don't know. Every time I go through the guide, I see like what you just said. Yeah.
There was a week where we were on 18 hours a day for an entire week. I know that.
I mean, no, here's the thing. We're laughing and joking about this, but it's something that Shawn Michaels told me years ago when we had, like, I think 3 segments on Raw or something. It's like, geez, we're busy tonight. He's like, what, are you going to complain about getting more TV time? Give me all the TV time. And that's kind of what you guys have. We're laughing about 18 hours a day, but that is prime real estate, and it is rare. I mean, you guys know, and I'll tell you, anybody listening, it's not easy to get on TV. It's not easy to have a hit show. And once again, when you finally do get a show, to get a second season, that's even harder sometimes than getting the show in the first place. So that's incredible that you guys have accomplished this at that level.
Yeah, we haven't been able to recreate it, really. Like, every TV show it's weird. Sal, would you agree with this? Like, there is a backlash to it, even within our own network, where they're like, all right, we got enough of you guys.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, we'll pitch them some things every once in a while. And we get something through. Dinner Party we got through, which I loved making.
We did 50 episodes, 3 seasons of a game show, too, called The Misery Index, that was rating even
better
than Jokers, actually. And they said it was not repeatable. So obviously, Jokers is repeatable. So they unceremoniously just was like, we're not going to renew it. They didn't even, like, have a conversation with us. We just, like, found out.
Was that on True TV as well?
TBS.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just finished, like, last year. And it was, like, it was such a good job.
Yeah, it was fun.
We got to go to the studio in, like, 10 days and film the entire season, which is the other show takes us 10 months, maybe.
Right.
So it was, like, yeah. And we were looking forward to it. And they just kind of, like, yeah, no. So we're trying to get it back on now, but that did happen. Like, in 2014, we got a sketch comedy show on True, and we were, like, thrilled. They gave us, like, a small little budget for it, and we had to shoot it, like, on off days of the show. Yeah. It was like, now that you look back at it, it was completely unideal. Like, they were like, let's give you guys another show. And then they were like, the budget is not enough, and you just shoot it on the days that you're not shooting the other show. We did. I thought we did a noble job considering, but they aired it. It was second on the network, only behind Jokers, obviously. Like, mm-hmm. You know, beat Joker, only behind Jokers. It was still rating like a 0.6 at the time, and no other show was even close. And they didn't even – they aired the episodes one time each and never aired them again. The network didn't see it. They just didn't like it.
Right.
And then there was also this weird, like, they didn't promote it the right way. And so our fans were like, what is this? Like, these guys don't do that. They do this. Like, right. we want to see this. Is this replacing that? And there was this whole, like, confusion behind it. And I think they just got, like, freaked out by it or something. I don't know.
So you mentioned something earlier that I just wanted to touch on. So you said that unscripted shows, you don't get residuals from the replays?
No, because you're not in SAG because you're not acting. They get you, bud. They get you.
It's like the WWE Network or Peacock or all that stuff. They're showing, you know, 1,000 Chris Jericho matches at any way, shape, or form. You can stream it, and there's no royalties for that. You know, it's like we should band together and start some kind of a unscripted union and then get banned from the business completely.
That's what would happen. They would get blackballed. That's exactly what would happen. They would be like, well, then we'll just cancel it.
It's so funny to call it unscripted because, we don't have like dialogue on the page. We're not writing scenes or anything. But every single concept, idea, joke, half the jokes are improvised, but we write the jokes too. You know, like we have a writing team and we have to come up with the ideas, conceptualize them, write them out, you know, every little beat of them, and then all the jokes. So it's kind of not like the best description of our show to say it's unscripted, but just there's only two categories.
It's interesting, though, because when we did the show, I mean, it was right up my alley. It was really cool for me to get invited onto Jokers because, like you said, we spoke a bit about some ideas of what we wanted to do, and we had – you know, kind of a skeleton. But when we showed up, I mean, it was just, let's just talk about this and let's do that. And let's eat some sushi off a naked man, you know, all the stuff. But you guys were basically just improvising, you know, we're just riffing here, which was, it's a wide open, easy way to do it. Is that how it's always been?
Yeah, that's pretty much been it.
Yeah.
I would say. But, it, you know, we've known each other for so long. And look, like aside, look, you killed it on the show. We're friends with you. We're fans of you. So you were an especially easy person to click in because we have an existing dynamic. You know, the three of us text each other all the time, and it's all just constant bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, it's who's making fun.
There's some great insults, by the way. It's been awesome.
Yeah, it's like great. And it could happen at 2 in the morning. It could happen at like 1 in the afternoon, 8 a.m. Like, I love it. Like, when my phone goes off and I see our text chain. So it's like
that. Familiarity is that it's comfortable. So, like,
Yeah.
Right.
I know what you're saying, because sometimes we'll have someone come in. Well, coming up now, we have a couple of people. For the most part, I think I would say like 80 to 90% of the people we've booked, we've had organic relationships with, and we want them on, and like we want, you know, like, to be part of it. Then there's been just, you know, some that we're just meeting for the first time. And so like that is totally a different dynamic.
Yeah.
You know, because we have to get them comfortable and get them in the space and understand what they're about and what they're down for. And, you know, we don't know their temperament or personality, or as like what Q was saying, we have a relationship with you. So you can be pleasantly surprised at the end of the day when it's all over. But like going into it, there's like a little bit of a question mark. Whereas going into it with you, we're just like, oh, I can't wait. Yeah. Like, you know,
you just know. Yeah. Well, similar to doing a podcast. I mean, some guests you get like with us 8 in the morning, just log on and start talking. Other people that you're not as familiar with, you might have to have some, I never have questions, but I might have to go online and look them up and study them a bit or whatever it may be. And some people just, you know, it's like Mike Tyson comes on and gives me a bunch of one word answers. And I'm like, dude, you understand this is a podcast. You're supposed to talk. That's what we're here for. You know, you got to do some stuff.
I'm not getting in on this conversation about Mike Tyson. Because you never know where you'll run into Mike Tyson.
That's true. When you guys, because another big change for you guys was this is the first season, I believe, without Joe.
Yeah.
And was that a complete change in the dynamic?
Yeah. I don't think on camera it's as much as I thought it would be, right, Sal? Like, I think everything's kind of really came to, like, on screen. Behind the scenes, there was a lot more work for us.
Really? Yeah, from a writing standpoint, a creating standpoint?
Yeah.
Joe did a lot of, like, just production stuff.
Oh, okay.
Like, we all had, like, different roles. Joe loved doing the production stuff. So, for the most part, he took that, you know, took the bull by the horns there. So we had to, like, and then also what happened was, in the timing of it was that because of the COVID break, we lost like a bunch of really tenured department heads.
Oh, right.
That really, like, you know, it takes a long time to get to that well-oiled machine where the show is, everyone knows their job and is good at their job. And it's like, it eased the burden on us after some time. And we got into that mode. It was like spoiled, like, you know, like, cause we were just, but losing Joe in tandem with those people and bringing in new people, we had to find a groove, which we're still kind of finding, right, actually. But we had to find this groove again. And then with the pressure of knowing we were coming back to the people without Joe, and they'd have their, you know, reservation and their criticisms, or they're looking under a microscope at us. So, and then the fact that he's not there, you know, he's like our dear friend. And like I always say, it's like making a recipe and removing a key ingredient. So how do you, you know? And I think that what Q was saying kind of like surprised us. I think, you know, after not being shooting like for so long because of COVID, when we got there, there was also this gratefulness and this excitement to see the people that we all worked with this whole time, and to be so happy as well to be back to work, even though we were like a little, you know, we were, you know, sad that we wouldn't be with Joe. But I think you show up and then there's a job to do. You know, our job is to be funny and be focused. And so you get on set and everybody's like, you know, everyone is like, all right, we got to do this. We got to do this. There's a goal. You know, every time we get to set, there's like a plan of attack and you kind of just get in there. And I think that like we just went into autopilot. And I think that because the dynamic of the show is that often like Q and I would do something, Murray and I would do something, Q does something. Like, so it still felt familiar. You know what I mean? Like Joe was missing, but like if I went out and did something with Murray, that's something I've done a million times. So it wasn't like there was still these like little elements and pockets of things that still felt normal. And I think that I wasn't really, I didn't know what to expect, but luckily it was smoother than I was anticipating.
We call it, I call it the wartime Impractical Jokers crew, because like it was this melding of new guys and old people that worked on the show. And it was like the way they came together, we were so stressed. I mean, we were like, cause look, do we want to do the show? Right. That was the first conversation. Like if Joe's leaving, that's a very nerve wracking conversation to even have when you have mortgages. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, do we even want to do the show? And then it's like, are people going to hate us? And you get those people who are like, no Joe, no show, or bring Joe back. And you're like, you just want to be like, motherfucker, it's like, I didn't ask Joe to leave. Like, you know what I mean? He's not here because of me. Like, I want him here.
It's a weird stance, right? Because it's like, I love the show. I love you guys. The show's the best. And then it's like, if Joe's not there, I'm not watching. And I was like, what?
Like, why?
Like, what a weird stance to take. Like, you don't even want to check it out.
I know. But you guys are experiencing, I'm sure, what like every band experiences. Like, you know, out of Van Halen, David Lee Roth is gone. No Van Halen. It's like, listen, we got another guy. He's just as good, if not better. What do you want me to do? It's still the great songs that you love. It's still the show that you love.
Should I go to exile because you guys want Joe on? Like, I don't know what you want. Like, I want him here. Like, I started to say people on the street who are like, oh, when are you getting Joe back? I'm like, you got to call him, man. Like, that's it. Like, I don't know what to tell you.
Right.
Yeah, but we've been getting, you know, but for the most part, I think it's been really.
Yeah, you're going to get that no matter what. It's a minority, but it is just funny to think about what
that's the, you know, we were just talking about, you know, the blood and guts that we had on Wednesday night. Oh, it was too long. Oh, it was too short. Oh, there's too many commercial breaks. It's like, you realize this is a free TV show that you watch for free that is on network TV that has commercials that you have to do to pay the bills so you can watch it for free.
Yeah. You know I mean, and by the way, look at what you guys did in that match. Like, are you people kidding me? Like, what more do they want? I thought, what is Cesaro calling him? Claudio. Like, when he's spinning you around on the top of the thing, like, I was like, I dude, I was just getting nervous. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, right. This is crazy. You guys are sweaty, man. I don't know who oils up. Like, what if you just shoot out into the audience? It could happen. Yeah.
But you never know, right?
That's the thing. You never know. Yeah.
And that's the same thing with what you guys are doing with your show. It actually is funny because when I saw that originally, I don't know why I thought this. Remember, wasn't there like the Backstreet Boys where one guy quit and there's only four Backstreet Boys? That's kind of what this reminds me of, the three Jokers now.
It is. And unfortunately, some people like Joe the most.
Yeah.
You know?
But Chris, you probably deal with that tenfold, a hundredfold, because wrestling fans are such – this
insane.
They're nothing if not, at first and foremost, opinionated.
Well, and very loyal in that they'll complain about everything, but they'll still keep watching. And I'm sure you have the same, complaining about this, that, and the other thing, get this guy back, or do this, or do that, or go back to season one, but they're still there with you watching on season 10.
Yeah. I think it's a new thing because, like, I would say, Sal, I don't know if you agree with this, like, we still have it. I know we're just talking about a very, very small minority, but we've always had such a great relationship with our audience. There's never been any really hate coming our way. It's just not happened. We've been so lucky about that over the years. So it's also odd dealing with that from our audience who have treated us so nice all these years. And then some of them are just like mean right now. I don't know.
Let's talk about some of the great moments and the great bits on the show. I have some in mind that I'd like to talk about, but I mean, the idea, like we said, is just to completely embarrass each other, put each other in positions that, like, it's cringe. Like, I was thinking, like, when I got the offer to do the show, because when Joe left, you kind of have a rotating fourth, and I was like, what are these guys going to make me do? And there was, oh, we're doing it to you, much better. But, I mean, there has been some just amazing moments. I'll start it off with my all-time favorite. I watch it all the time, is when you open for the Imagine Dragons. And it's Sal and Joe, who we're talking about, who's not with the band anymore. I mean, that one, just let's talk a little bit about that. You guys go to open for Imagine Dragons, but you don't play any instruments.
Man, that one was one of my all-timers, I think. It was one of the biggest production pieces we had earlier on. Because at this point now, I think that's been like 6, 7, 8 years ago, whatever. And that was a real get for us. While this thing, we were filming in Washington Square Park, I believe, and we met this gentleman and his wife and one of their babies. They were walking in the park, and they just said that they were big fans. And we were like, why don't you sit down with us and hang out and watch for the day? And they were the sweetest people. And it turned out that the person we met was, his name was Mac Reynolds. And he is the brother of Dan Reynolds, the lead singer of Imagine Dragons. And he's a lawyer and a manager.
He's their manager, yeah.
He managed them. And they hadn't broke yet when we met him. And he was managing the Killers at the time. I don't know if he still is. But they were the band. We were like, why do you manage the Killers? And he's like, I manage another band. He goes, they're going to be huge. And we kept in touch with them. And then that band became Imagine Dragons. I think they were probably out already, but we just didn't. Yeah. I think they broke publicly. And then we met them and they offered us to come in there. So we were at the, where was that?
Jones Beach.
Which is a huge amphitheater. There's 20,000 people there.
Yes. And it was their biggest show. I believe it was their biggest show to date, or because they were saying like, this is like the thing. And when I tell you, so the thing was, Joe and I had to open for them as a band called
Imagination Dragons, wasn't it?
No, that's what they called
them. Oh, right.
What was it called?
Brian names the band after our high school Spanish teacher.
What is it again?
Senor Alonso.
Senor Alonso.
Yeah.
Yeah. Literally, she was my Spanish teacher. Like, so we came out and put us in tights and like ripped, everything. And dude, it just so happened there was three other openers.
Yeah, it was too long.
So there was three openers, an intermission, and them. So three bands played before we went on. And then what they did was they lowered the lights and started like those roving spotlights. and they put on like that music, like, like they were going to come out. And so the people were like, all right, there's been an intermission. We've seen three bands. The lights are down. They went nuts, man. Nuts. And then Joe and I just walked out, two guys. And we're like, thank you. We are Senor Alonso. And they were just looking at each other like, because we weren't even on the bill.
Yeah.
they slip in my pocket right before I go out. They slip a thing that I had to read, and I didn't see it. And when I did this 14,000 people, I still have it. I have it. I keep certain things, so I have this note.
It was in the museum. The note was in the museum that
now,
we had.
Now, just to you guys have earpieces in, and the guys are backstage with microphones telling you what to do.
Yeah.
And so, but the what to do was go out and do a concert.
Right.
There was no instructions. And I don't play guitar. Joe didn't play drums. And I don't sing. And we went out there. And the first thing I did was take out the thing. And it said, I'd like to dedicate this concert. This is in Long Island, right? New York. Right. I'd like to dedicate this concert to the people of Pittsburgh. They were the best crowd we've ever had. And I can already tell you people will be nowhere near as good. It was like straight up heel shit. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was heel by the book.
Like a behind the scene thing, that wasn't originally part of it. Like I wrote that side stage about 10 minutes before they went out. It was just like, oh, I got an idea. And my handwriting was so bad that we had to have someone from production rewrite it. Because I was going so fast that I was like, you know, my handwriting looks like a child. So that was like, that turned out to be a good one. And then when you called the band Imagination Dragons, that came from Dan, the lead. He goes, people get our name wrong all the time. He goes, tell them to call us Imagination Dragon. The fans will hate it. Hate it. And it worked. It was like an A-bomb.
Because they got on the mic and they were trying to tell us what to do. By the way, I think that was the first time I was in front of a crowd that big too. Like people don't like that's never experienced that when you walk out
right.
and stand on a stage and there's 15,000 people look, it's like, oh my God. And then they just go sing. And so I start strumming the guitar. He starts hitting the drums and I'm riffing songs and they just start booing and they're throwing things and everything. And I'm going Imagination Dragons thing, you know? And then like they would say, sing a song called Shut Your Face Grandma. So then I just sang a song called Shut Your Face Grandma. And then we did like three songs. It felt like it was never ending.
Songs.
And
then,
yeah.
Yeah. That's air quotes.
Joe kept going like drum solo, like the drums and everything, and then I was like, I don't know what to do, and they were like, I think someone was like, you know, insult them more. I was like, just I thought they were, and so I start going like, I'm up there like, let me play like a punk song now,
right.
All that thing to me was that I would yell and hit it harder, yeah. But I was like, all right, I'll do a punk song. So I start going. The Imagination Dragon. Like, I can't believe I'm doing this, but they're telling me like to mess with them. So I was like, all right. And I keep going, The Imagination Dragon. I go, we're better than them. Better than them. The Imagination Dragons. And so I got to tell you something else, but I'll tell you fast forward. I go off stage and I did not realize, no one told me this, and it didn't click with me, but they're all Mormon and their crowd is a lot of Mormon
people. Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
And then there was an edict to not curse. And I didn't even know that. And then I walked off stage and like Dan was like in the face. He was just like shell-shocked. Yeah. And we were like, oh, he goes, I just wish you wouldn't curse like that. And I was like, oh, was I not supposed to curse? No, we don't curse, man. We're like, what? And I was like, I felt like that was their crowd of all those people. And they had us as guests. And I can't tell you how bad I felt. I had no idea. They were really cool about it. But I don't think in their illustrious, decorated career thus far, a curse steward shit has been uttered on stage. I said, I screamed at the crowd 20 times. And then when I'm out there, all of a sudden, I it's so like overwhelming. And the guys are yelling in my ear and I'm trying to play these songs on the fly and people throwing shit at us. And a stagehand comes up and he starts to try to take my guitar from me and unplug the guitar. And I'm like moving the guitar away from him and I'm screaming in the mic. And I thought it was like part of like the, like they were going to have a guy come out and mess with me. So the guy's like, give me the guitar. And I'm like, get away from me. And he's like trying to grab the guitar and I'm pulling it away. He's like, I said, give me the guitar. And I'm just like, just get out of here. And I wouldn't give it to him. And I was yelling back at him because I thought it was part of the thing. That was their real stage road manager. And he wanted me off for real. And I didn't know. And I was like, get away from me. No. And he tried to unplug the stuff. And I was ripping it back away from him because they were in danger of going into overtime.
Right.
right? So there's a curfew at live shows, if people don't know this. And if you go over the curfew, the union guys make like double the amount.
Yes. Even if you, you go over like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
1 minute, like you could,
yeah,
you start hemorrhaging money if you go past the curfew. And this guy is trying to get me off. No one communicated to me that he was with them and that they were in trouble of going over. So not only did I just scream at them for 20 times in a row, but I wouldn't get off the stage. And then on my own accord, I stage dove off. And then when I got to the side, they were like, oh my God, you said curse. And then they were like, oh my God, we're going into overtime. They had to choose whether they were going to cut the show short and not do any encores to not go into overtime, or just incur all these extra fees that hit their bottom line. And they did. They went, because their finale was unbelievable.
Yeah.
They put lead singer Dan and the guys, they clip him in and they pull him into the air on the ropes, like 50 feet in the air. And he has a drum on him and they spin him, and he's just spinning like a, what do you call those things? Those windmill, like those.
Yeah.
He's spinning and he's playing the drums while he's spinning 50 feet in the air. The place went nuts. And we watched from the side. It was the most fascinating thing I've ever seen. But I caused them so much money and so much strife. I can't believe they stayed friends with us after that.
Great guys. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is there one for you that stands out, or a couple that stand out for you as your favorites?
Well, I don't know, about like getting punished is a weird thing, right? Because like favorites is a hard thing.
When Yeah.
But we shot, and the one that was the hardest for me was the Universal Studios tram ride where you go through the back lot and you go past the Bates Motel and they take you through the what's that, Tom Cruise, War of the Worlds, of the plane crash. It's in L.A. So it's a tram tour and it's very famous. And it's about a 45-minute tour, and we were on it once. I actually f***ed myself with this. We were on it once, and some woman dropped her sunglasses off. So they had to stop it down, and there's a whole security thing and safety thing. It's not just stop, grab the sunglasses. It's stop, wait for security to come, get it, hand it to the woman, and go. So like she did it once, and everybody was annoyed but kind of cool about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I was like, we happened to get permission to shoot in Universal Studios. And I was like, well, guys, this happened to me once on a ride. Maybe we should consider this as punishment. And they heard that and was like, that's a great idea. He's the one. You're the one getting punishment. You're going to be on the ride. And I mean, I think you guys made me stop it 11 times. Like it was a 45-minute tour turned into almost 2 hours. And after the first one, I pulled it, and it wasn't I dropped my sunglasses. We went past the Back to the Future courthouse.
It's an emergency court, right? Yeah. So when you pull it, they have to stop. Right.
Oh, thank gotcha.
Okay, yeah, I'm
gotcha.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So it's like a subway or an old train. Right. Like you would pull it, or a bus where you press the thing and it says stop.
You only pull it for emergency.
That's like it. Emergency. It's like colored red. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it's like, you know, there's pictures of flames behind it. They're like, don't pull this unless. So the guy pulls like, we go past the courthouse and they're like, and they're in my ear and they're like, pull. So I pull it, ding. And everybody's just like, oh, well, what's going on? What's going on? Like, you know, it's just the first time. And then the guy comes back. He's like, is everything okay, sir? And I go, yeah. I go, just could you repeat that thing you said about the courthouse? And the guy was like, okay, well, please don't pull it for that. That's for emergencies. So that's the first time. And then it's every 6 minutes after that I'm pulling it. And like, it's me alone on the ride. I'm in the middle seat. They really got me good. I'm in the middle seat. There's two people here. And by the third time, people hated me. And you felt it. And it was like just concentrated hate. And the people next to me were like kind of like scooting away because you feel it. You feel
right.
The energy and hate. And then like little girls start giving you dirty looks. And that and then like by the time you pull it for the eighth time, like I've never felt anything like it in my life. The concentrated hate of a family on vacation, time set. And one guy stands up, and I think we have this in the show. He stands up and goes, when this ride's over, I'm going to find you. And people are going, you're ruining our vacation. And some guy in the back is going, we saved 3 years to be here, and you're ruining it. What is the matter with you? And I can't say anything but pull this stuff. And by the fifth time I pull it, people are going, no, get him off. Get them off. And you know, they're not getting me off because they're in on it. I felt bad inside.
The guy, the security guard, well, the driver.
Oh, that was so funny.
It also wasn't one tram. It was like you know, like they have these long trams with like bench rows, and each tram can hold like 60, 70 people. But it was like four of them connected.
Yeah, it's like a Disney parking lot tram, right?
Of course.
Right? Yeah.
It was like 200 people. And then the guy, the driver, they were all connected. So there's only one driver. And he was in like, Brian was on like the third or fourth tram. So every time he pulled it, I said, after like the second time, after like the third time, when the guy wanted to stop, he jammed on the brakes. And the guy would hop off, and then he'd have to walk like 60 feet. Like, he'd like charge to the back, like, and pass all these people, like hot-headed. It was funny.
He was great.
And then by the time he got to you, he's like, sir. He's like, I explained to you already. That is not an emergency. You have to stop it.
Is there like an unwritten rule for you guys that like you have to continue? Like you mentioned, like you're so embarrassed, you feel this hatred. What's the like rule? Like you just got to play along because we got a show to do.
You just got to do it. That's what you're there for, man.
That takes a special kind of person to not go, okay, guys, it's a show. Like it's insane that you go through that. Like has there ever been any violence towards you where you get punched or?
I think that's why that one was so difficult, because we don't normally piss people off. Like we don't normally go to piss people off. Like most of the time it's.
I mean,
it's
then again, we do. Like it's so funny because we say that, but I just finished telling that story. You know?
Yeah, we try not to.
We don't try to insult anyone per se. Yeah. Like you know, we don't try to get one person particularly mad necessarily. I guess
right.
But it's like blanket upsetness. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's so many different. We do so many different things that there's certainly a dynamic where we're pushing those limits. That's a running theme, but you can't do anything. While we're out there, we try to be as in the moment as possible, because it's still, this is really happening to us, and we still are feeling the way anyone that's watching the show would feel. And so we're representing people that are watching, you know, like being put in these situations. So we want to be in the moment because it has to be as related as possible. But we also understand we're making a show. We're exec producing a show. We know like what we need. So like, no, we're not going to stop, because for us, it's like we came here today to get to this point. You know what I mean? Like that's what we're looking for. So, and it's like, you know, mentally you have to get there. So it really is sometimes, some days, and sometimes it really is a drag. Yeah.
I think too, that's one of the appeals of the show though, because I know like my son and all his friends are just flipping out. Like they don't care about Dynamite or Fozzie or AEW or anything. You're on the Impractical Jokers.
Oh, wow.
We're
going to
have a,
cool.
a watching party. You know, these are 18-year-old kids, but I think the reason is because you guys will do the stuff that no one else would do.
Oh, I maybe. I don't know. I hope nobody starts doing it, because then we got competition.
In this scenario, I think that I don't know a lot of people that... I gotta take my medication.
That's the first time in almost 900 episodes I've ever heard that on the air.
Oh, it's better. What was the old one that was a curse that you had? That you had one.
Oh yeah, that was when I got a text or something. It used to go mail, mother.
email. We were in a Perkins once on tour, and it just starts going text, mother. Text. And Gatto just looked at Sal and goes, we're surrounded by families. Could you put it on silent?
No, the worst thing that ever happened with that was when I opened up my first business ever. I opened a bar with some friends, and we had local television affiliate come to interview me on site, because I opened up like an art space and a bar and stuff. And like she had the mic, like it was like a news interview, and we were in my establishment. And I'm like, yeah, grand opening is this day, and I'm on the news. And she's like, oh great, and what could people expect? And I was about to say it, and my phone went ding, mail, mother. there was no pretending that it didn't do that, and we didn't hear that. And I didn't know what to do, and I was on the news, and I was like, and I didn't say anything. I just kept going. I was like, we're open Monday through.
One last one I want to talk about, because another thing you mentioned is that you're filming this in New York City. Now, New Yorkers are notorious for being a little bit, feisty, shall we say. when you guys cut to the front of the line for the Broadway tickets?
Yeah. We always say Sal got manhandled by an old man. Like, because that guy grabbed his neck, right? He grabbed your neck and tried to force you out of the line.
I don't know how much of that we showed. Back in the day, they would cut it short a little bit.
Gotcha.
If we did it now, like that, there was the guy who was like a vet, a war vet.
He was right? like 80.
He was literally like, I was in the war. And then he got so, he goes, what are you trying to pull? And then he just lunged at me, grabbed my neck, and started bringing
like the old honeymooners. Yeah. I'm going to yeah. I had a pound, you.
Yeah, it was such an old form of assault. It was such an antiquated form of assault. I was like, I can't believe this is happening to me.
So you guys are trying to get to the front of the line and acting like confused to get these tickets.
Yeah, it was just who could get to the front of the line the fastest to cut the line to get the ticket. And I think Gatto won, right? He just went Larry and like walked up to the front and like grabbed the ticket.
Well, the thing, yeah, it's in Broadway and it's this thing called TKTS. And what people, you can get discounted, heavily discounted Broadway tickets for day of. So, you know, if you're visiting from out of town and you want to wait on that line, it pays off. Because a lot of times people have to buy their tickets months in advance. It's cheaper and it's day of. So that line gets to be a thousand, like 500 people.
Yeah, it can get pretty long, and it's like in the middle of Times Square where there's no shade, like just where. So it's like if it's a summer, they're standing in 90-degree humid weather for like an hour and a half to get these tickets, and along come these four chumps, like from Staten Island, who are just like with them in their day and stuff like that. And that old guy had just seen enough. Whatever war he had been through, he wasn't losing this battle. Like, he just wasn't doing it. He was like, it's not happening. And he was at the end of the line, too.
That was brutal. Like, I honestly, that was very brutal. Like, if we did that today, we should revisit that, actually. Well, we're recognizable now, but, like, that is, it's tough to cut a person in line. Yeah. Not, like,
right.
100 people. And then they see you going, too. Like, excuse me. And they all start to think, like, what was that? You know, and then it snakes the line. So like then you're passing those people again. and people are just like, what do you, that one's tough too. That drew a lot of ire.
Yeah.
Does it make it, you mentioned something, does it make it harder now that you guys, you know, are on True TV 18 hours a day to do some of these gags?
It does. It's harder, but as we've grown more recognizable, we've developed ways to combat it, which we never tell anybody, because once right. people know what it is, then they'll figure it out. But like, we have ways to filter people out and stuff like that. Plus, we shoot in New York, you know what I mean? There's eight to 10 million people around here. I mean, if 8 to 10 million people watch every episode of our show,
yeah,
you know, we'd be...
You're getting into Mick Jagger category.
Yeah, it's case, like, right? That's just not the case. So
the number one thing we hear is, how do we still film it? It's like, people are like, it's impossible. And then there's a small contingent of people online that are like, it's fake. It's completely fake. And then people are like, oh, I know it's fake.
Oh, Jesus.
And we're like, fake. Guys, give me a break. what do you think this is? Like, you, yeah. like
The Truman Show? Everybody's in on it?
Yeah.
It's a decade of like just of people. And they're like, well, I saw the person in season 9 I saw in season 2. And we're like, maybe. Like we do focus groups. Like, a lot of those people go to focus groups as – on the regular, they like to do it and they make money. So once in a blue moon, like we have a database of names, so someone can't get on twice. But it's like it's human.
Right.
Yeah, people leave positions, new people come in, list gets lost, whatever.
So we always check against the database, and people check just like, do they look familiar? But you're talking about
thousands,
10 seasons of people.
Right.
We don't even know the people. We had people apparently come back on one time, and afterward they go, oh, this person checked out that they were in this database, and they didn't even know that they were on a show again, because it wasn't the same person they dealt with before, and they also don't give a shit. They never saw the show even since they were on last time. So to them, they're just doing another focus group 8 years later, and it's James and it wasn't me. And like, you know, and that's happened like a couple of times, but it's like, out of, you know, I mean, we've probably dealt with 10,000 people already. You know what I mean? So it's like.
Right. Sure. Sure.
Yeah.
As we start to wind down here, a lot of these gags, like you said, you do them, you get it over with, it's done. It's immortalized in television. It's hilarious. But the one that really got to me more than anything was the tattoos that you guys had to get. And that shows kind of how committed you are, because both of the ones that you have are pretty brutal.
I like mine. I like my tattoos. Sal definitely, like, this is just a cute cat, man. You know what I mean? It says 38, lives alone, has three cats. That's
So that's some humor bad. There. So that's yeah. not bad, right? Okay.
Sal just got straight up f***ed.
So, like, how come Sal got f***ed? You didn't get f***ed on this one.
Because I'll tell you why. Because Sal suffers the best. He's just like a whipping boy sometimes because he's so funny when he suffers. So if you're going to give anybody the Jaden Smith tattoo, it's going to be Sal. Because I'll get that tattoo and then I'll let it go. Like, I'll just forget about it. It's eating Sal up to this day, like, that he has a Jaden Smith tattoo. And then we did the movie and did another one.
Yeah, I have two.
Two Jaden Smith.
Yeah, because first of all, it was just bullshit that it was given to me arbitrarily. Like, James and Q got two things that had to do with them. But the first one was a full color, accurate. Like, you ever see those realistic tattoos? It's a black and white, very accurate portrait, real accurate, of Jaden, and he's 15, which is also weird. And then and then it's on my thigh. So it's a 15-year-old boy on my thigh. It's Jaden Smith. And then in the movie, we got Jaden Smith in the movie, and I crashed his a movie premiere of his. And I crashed it as his number one fan. And the people in the audience didn't know. And they called me on stage. And they had Jaden knew, and he goes, show the tattoo to the audience. Cause I was wearing a shirt that said I'm number one Jaden fan. So, like, I was wearing Daisy Dukes. So I turned to the audience of his movie premiere and I lifted up to Daisy Dukes and I showed it, and they were like, oh my, like, they were shocked. Cause I'm a middle-aged man, you know, like, and then he says, well, that doesn't even look like me anymore. I'm 21 now. And he goes, I think that needs to be updated. And the crowd goes nuts. And then we leave there and go five blocks away to a tattoo parlor. And then he poses for my other thigh. Oh, and it's a full color accurate portrait of him at 21 years old.
Oh, my gosh. So he was in on the gag then.
The second time, yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't the first, which is amazing. We ended up hearing about it. And then he was – props to him, and he was so cool, and he was game to come in, and he even, like, stood there for a bit.
Yeah,
and everything.
He's a nice kid.
He's in the movie, you know. He was in our movie, and so I have him at 15 and 21 on both thighs.
He said that with, like, almost like a, yeah, man, I got both thighs done now. This is cool stuff.
The question is always, do I get a version of him every few years continually?
I told Sal if he waits, it's just gonna eventually be two tattoos of Morgan Freeman on his left. Just give it enough time. It'll sag.
Last few questions here. You guys are obviously, we mentioned you're filming season 10 now. Live shows, movies, True TV 51% of the time. What's kind of the overall plan for the future for you guys? Are we continuing to do this? Is there other plans that you have to continue to build this empire?
Yeah, I think we do Jokers until they make us stop. You know, who knows? You never know, like, what day is going to come. But, like, we're still having fun doing it. We're developing other shows now that we just signed a development deal with Warner Brothers. So we're working on that to, like, try and bring new concepts that we've always wanted to do to life. You know, we're working out. We're trying to really work out an angle with AEW to get in there and play with you guys for a little bit. We're working on that, man.
You talk to us. I got to get involved in that again.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how much you want me to, you know, we got to go to Atlanta for a little bit to get up to speed, and not get hurt. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
So that's the next step, which the ball's in our court, but
that's
We're going to do that and then come.
I'm so scared though. I'm so scared.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll get hurt. I know I'm going to
That's going to be amazing. So listen, you had jeans frozen to your legs.
Yeah.
I think you'll be okay taking a hip toss.
I hope so. I hope so. Although Tommy Dreamer did put me through the ringer already, and I survived that. So I think we'll be all right, I hope. As long as you guys are nice to us.
I know.
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm talking about.
We have the development deal. We're doing, like, Q's doing an animated show. We're doing, like, a game show. We're doing scripted. And then all that stuff in the pike. And we, like, it's literally the most thing we're excited about.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, you know. Okay, last question for you. We've talked about some of the funniest moments. What's the most embarrassing moment that you've had on the show where you almost wanted to break and go, stop, I can't do this anymore? Is there one that stands out for you other than all of them?
Yeah, I had to. This was an early one that was really tough for me. But, like, They made me teach my, like, they told me I was teaching this classroom full of, like, teenagers sex ed, and that was going to be the punishment, and that was bad enough. And then, like, they showed me the room. This is how, like, crazy it gets. They showed me the room, and they had the room full of preteens, right? And I'm like, they look so young. You want me to go in there and talk to them about sex? I can't do that, right? And the producers pulled me aside, and they were talking to me about something. Then when I went into the room, it was my mom and my dad. And they're like, you have to teach your mom and dad sex ed. And they made this. They made the slide. They gave me a donut and a hot dog. Like, I had to, like, teach my parents. And by the way, it aired, I think it cut down to 7 minutes, but it was over an hour. I was in there talking to my parents about, like, mom, like, do you know what 69 means? It was like, it was stuff like that. Oh, and my mother's gosh. Like, religious.
That's not sex ed. That's like honors course.
Yeah, you guys wrote it, and my mother goes to church like twice a week. She's like a godly woman, and she's sitting there going, "Oh, Brian, my dad's got this big sheeting." But that was really hard. Like, that was hard to look in your parents' eyes and discuss their sex life.
Sal,
the one that came to mind first, although it's probably just endless, but I played a delivery guy, and I was delivering lunch to people in their office buildings in the city in New York. And man, I had to tell everyone, like, so I'd arrive at the desk and they'd call that person down. I had their food in a bag and they would come down. And when they paid me, I had to be like, this tip is shit. And I just had to literally insult the tip.
No matter what it was.
Yeah.
And I don't, you got to understand, like, people are not prepared to hear that and they don't know how to deal with that. And it was very, very mortifying. Like, that's so oddly, like, very insulting.
Right.
I don't know, you know, like, because people give what they can. It just felt so terrible. And I did it, like, for an afternoon. I did it for, like 10 people. I think I remember when they said I could stop, I literally, like, fell on the floor and just, like, laid there for a little bit. Because the feeling in your gut is so terrible. And I literally had to be like, this is shit. This is a shit tip. What are you trying to pull? You know, like,
and just those words, too. Like, this tip is shit. Not even, like, bad. This is shit.
Dumbfounded. And then, like, some of them would be like, and some of them would, like, just look down and just, like, almost like in a daze, just hand me more money. And then one guy was like, do you want me to go back upstairs and get more? And I'm like, yes. And then another guy, you ever see, like, when you have to go through, like, they have to, like, hit a button to open the glass door so you can get into the area. Yeah. So he came out of the glass door into the lobby to pay me. And then I did that whole thing with him. And then he went to go back in, and his key card wasn't working. And so he was stuck. He couldn't get back in, and me and him were just standing there together. He was so nice. Yeah, that was terrible.
Listen, it was great to be on the show. I had a blast.
Dude, thank you,
and
man.
It's great to talk to you guys. And like you said, it's always funny texting back and forth with you guys. And I'm glad that we're going to be seeing more of you guys in AEW. And more Impractical Jokers, but congratulations on building.
I'm going to Canada. I'm actually going to Canada too soon. For the first time, I'm going to Canada to perform.
All right.
Yeah, I'm going to Toronto, Hamilton, Vancouver.
Well, you'll bomb up there for sure.
I will, right? I was wondering how that's going to be. I don't know.
We'll guys, see. I don't know. No, but congratulations on 10 years of, like, are you serious with this thing still?
Yeah, thank you.
It's amazing, and it's great to. Like I said, the show is hilarious, and I'm excited for everybody to see it.
Thanks, bud. I mean, and you know, it meant so much to us when you came on, dude, and you killed for us, even though you physically hurt me. It was, and we've said, like, from our first appearance on this podcast, like, you know, we've been massive fans of yours your entire career. We've proven that with photos and pictures and stories. So to have you on was. It was pretty special, man. It really was. It was, like, special for us. It was one of those moments. So thank you for coming on.
Well, for me too, guys. I appreciate it. I know you're all busy. I got a date with Sal's mom, so I got to.
I remember when I told you that I bought one of your books, and it was, like, it was one that wasn't the most recent. It was on paperback, and you were like, oh, big deal.
Thanks.
you bought a paperback version from 2 months ago.
There's a solid 12 cents in my royalty check. Thanks, buddy. All right, dudes. We'll see you soon, man. Thank you so much.
All right, Chris. Thanks, bud.
Cheers, guys.